me, Robert Smith, me, host, you, listener, and this, Cheetah. Cheetah the chimp, Tarzan's sidekick Hollywood legend, now supposedly in his 70s and living in seclusion in Palm Springs. He has written an autobiography, a simian romp through the golden age of Hollywood. It's called Me Cheetah, My Life in Hollywood. Cheetah, of course, can't be with us today, but we do have his ghostwriter, chimp writer, James Lever, is on the line from London. What should we call you?
Just say I assisted Cheetah in getting it into print.
You channeled him.
Yes, I made him up, actually, is probably more accurate.
So there's so many Hollywood stars to be able to tell this story through. Why choose an ape, a chimpanzee?
I suppose because Cheetah's a character who's, unfortunately, believes very much in humanity, believes in it because Tarzan's like a sort of Adam, and he's a friend to Adam. And Johnny Weissmuller, of course, is just the same as Adam. He's just a fantastic innocent. And it was really Weissmuller that is the story that you wanted to tell, because Weissmuller was a wonderful guy, and he had an unhappy life, but he really was just a big, lovable, innocent kid. That was a nice story to tell via Cheetah, who is, of course, deeply in love with both Tarzan and Weissmuller.
Well, describe to me what Cheetah does as he goes through his life in Hollywood. Some of the more sordid stories, let's say.
Well, that's outrageous that you should just want to know the most sordid stuff. But
I do. I want to know every single bit of gossip about Cheetah. I mean, that's why you read a Hollywood tell-all, right? You're not reading it for the philosophy.
Well, what did he do? I mean, people get into the habit of thinking that Cheetah will sort of add a decadent touch to various orgies. So people get into the habit of saying, let's have the monkey around, you know, a little touch of darkest Africa will turn us on. And of course, Cheetah's just sitting there, bored out of his head, watching Marlene Dietrich and Mercedes de Acosta have sex in front of him. He crashes Doug Fairbanks' car. He bites Lupe Velez on the bottom. Well, you know, he does quite a lot, actually.
And how much of that is based on reality?
absolutely none of that is based on reality.
Well, then why tell the story?
The main reason to tell the story is, I suppose, it's the story of somebody who hasn't got a clue who they are. You know, he thinks he's a great movie star, but in actual fact, he's a prisoner. Cheetah gets everything completely upside down. So when he sees, you know, when he sees the heads of animals, hunted animals, mounted on the wall of a Hollywood mansion, he's sure that these are the mementos of much loved pets that are preserved on the walls. You know, he's convinced that everything we do is for the good of animals. They're trying to rescue us. It's a great project.
One of the ways we see this non-human perspective of Cheetah is in the book, where he talks about how he thinks that movies work. Could you read that for us?
Okay. You heard of the primitive who thinks the camera is stealing his soul. Well, of course, the opposite was true. We enacted the dream, and as a kind of byproduct of converting the dream into the past, the cameras gave us our souls. They poured soul over us, and if they gave you enough of it, you started to become an immortal.
Well, you know, as we watch the series of Tarzan movies, the dream sort of becomes a little bit of a nightmare for Cheetah. There's this constant conflict between him and Maureen O'Sullivan, who plays Jane. They're almost sort of competing for the attentions of Tarzan. Here's a scene from Tarzan and his mate, and Cheetah has just stolen Jane's dress.
Cheetah, can't you see I've got nothing on? Cheetah, give it. Give it to me. Give it to me.
It's always a question of whether or not Jane is going to go home. This is the main thing. Can she be lured back to civilization? She's vain, and she can be lured back with a silver dress and so on. And Cheetah knows it.
That's sort of the dramatic arc, I guess, of your book, is the destruction of Jane. And in some ways, the destruction of this family that they had sort of put together.
What is really interesting about that is that it's unstoppable if you continue a series. In 1932, you've got a very beautiful Arcadian tragedy. You know, it's a comedy, but it's got this sort of mythical depth to it, the first Tarzan movie, and the second one, Tarzan and His Mate. And then, of course, as it continues, you see that anything that goes on for a while becomes a soap, because it has to continue being happy. It can't continue to tell the truth. So as the series goes on, poor old Cheetah doesn't understand that what he's up against is time. He thinks he's against Jane, who's trying to keep everything hunky-dory, and here comes Johnny Sheffield trying to keep everything really swell as boy, and he recognises that all these forces are against the preservation of this paradise. He can't get out of this fact that these two are time and Tarzan isn't time. And of course Tarzan is time, because Johnny Weissmuller's beautiful body, which America grows up learning about time from the decay of Johnny Weissmuller's torso, until in 1948 you have a middle-aged man running around Tarzan and the Mermaids, which is one of the worst films you could possibly imagine, and very sad.
You get so serious sometimes, I have to remind myself that we are talking about a fake autobiography of Tarzan's sidekick here.
It's a nice form, isn't it? Most of my favourite comic novels are very, very sad. You know, like Lolita, you know, it's a despairing kind of laughter. And yet, you couldn't think of a funnier book than Lolita. The sadder it gets, the funnier it gets.
James Lever is the author of Me Cheetah, My Life in Hollywood. As Tarzan would say, Umgawa.
Umgawa, Robert.
Okay, so some people claim that the real chimpanzee who played Cheetah is still alive, 76 years old, living like a real retiree in Palm Springs, California. R.D. Rosen, is that true?
No, it's not true. He's 48, he's not 76, and he was once trained by a man who I think trained some chimps who played Cheetah in the early Tarzan movies.
Now, you were hired several years back to write a biography of Cheetah, but along the way you found that there was an awful lot of holes in the Palm Springs chimps' claim to fame. So what made you first suspect that the cheetah in Palm Springs might not be the original cheetah?
It was never my intention to be the whistleblower on Cheetah's actual age. Obviously, I began this in a state of great excitement. I was amazed that Cheetah was alive. The first wrinkle was a story that had been repeated in Newsweek, in People magazine, in various articles, in newspapers, and now was part of his biography, and that was that his first owner had bought him or found him in Liberia in 1932 and smuggled him onto a Pan Am transatlantic flight and brought him home, during which the chimp got out, ran up and down the aisles of the plane. The stewardesses, then called stewardesses, were shrieking. They pacified him with bottles of warm milk. It was a fascinating story until I thought, wait a second, did they have commercial transatlantic travel just 5 years after Lindbergh's flight? You know, Google produced an answer for me in about 6 seconds, which is no, there was no commercial transatlantic travel until 1939, and then it was suspended, of course, for World War II almost immediately. So that was the little end of the yarn that I started to pull on, and the whole thing unraveled.
So where did all these stories of cheetah stardom come from?
They came largely from Tony Gentry, the first owner of Cheetah. I think this was a kind of innocuous Hollywood self-aggrandizing lie. He passed this cheetah off as a cheetah who had actually appeared in Tarzan films, which some of his earlier chimps had, and people ate it up. I don't think he could foresee down the road what some of the consequences were of this, that cheetah would become an international phenomenon.
Writer R.D. Rosen, thank you very much.
You're welcome.